Welcome to this episode of The Atheist Experience. We are live. Today is Sunday, June 14th, 2020, and I am honored to be joined once again by prolific XJW author. And I say prolific because even though this is the only book of his that I have, look at it.
I am prolific, Matt, because I've written two books.
I know.
That counts as prolific.
And that's two more than I've finished, which makes you twice as awesome as me. How you doing, Lloyd? Welcome back.
Not bad, thank you. Yeah, an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me back. It's a delight to be broadcasting from Croatia for this show.
And you guys, you were telling me you guys are no longer quarantined. It's got, you know, so that's nice, maybe.
I can go out. I can go anywhere I like in the car. I don't wish to rub it in, though.
I can go anywhere I like in the car.
Oh, right. Okay.
And actually, it's annoying to me right now because basically the mayor of Austin has announced like a day or so ago that because there's been an increase, an uptick since they started opening things up, that he's probably going to extend the stay-at-home order, which was supposed to end on the 15th. And I haven't heard yet if the announcement's been made. It may be that it gets made tomorrow. I don't know. I get frustrated because on the rare occasions when I do have to go out, like if I have to get groceries or do whatever, I find myself like physically bristling at all the idiots that aren't social distancing and aren't wearing masks and are, hey, let's go down to the beach and let's go downtown to party. And I can understand, and granted, I'm not necessarily in favor of taking the risk for protest, but I mean, you know, Black Lives Matter. And we're in this constant state where it seems like some African-American male is going to be killed by the cops any given week. And I think that's an important thing to address. So I'm not down on the protesters. I just wish people would be a little more safe and a little, because this coronavirus thing is not gone. And we have several states who've started to reopen. And what we've seen is an uptick in the number of hospitalizations. And that's going to be the prime driving factor, whether or not the mayor of Austin keeps it that way for Travis County.
I think the consideration of other people is just lacking in general in society nowadays, isn't it? I mean, you would think that Black Lives Matter would just be a given for people to get behind it, but there's just a lack of consideration for other people's experiences, really.
There's a lot of positions that I think should be met with, well, duh, and they're not.
Yeah.
In some cases, they're met with, no, don't say that, say all lives matter, all right? So when we're trying to save the rainforest, are you going to come up and say, hey, no, don't say I'm trying to save the rainforest. Try to save all forests, you know. Don't do any research on prostate cancer. Let's cure all cancer.
We did a Black Lives Matter live stream on my channel today, and one of my guests came up with an excellent answer to All Lives Matter from Matthew. You know where Jesus says, you know, if you're missing a sheep, don't you leave all of your sheep behind and go find your lost sheep.
Right.
Well, shouldn't the same logic apply when you have an entire demographic that's suffering inequality and injustice? Don't you focus on that? So that's the first biblical explanation I've heard for why all lives matter.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. We're going to have to just put that in front of every Christian who doesn't seem to understand it. But, you know, I don't know. My big thing here is that welcome to the Atheist Experience, a nonprofit educational program sponsored by a nonprofit educational organization, the Atheist Community of Austin. You can find out more about the Atheist Community of Austin at atheist-community.org. You can support us and become a patron at patreon.com/theatheistexperience. But also, I want to remind people that there is merchandise available, and you can go to, we don't have the website up on with that one. I thought it was bit.ly.co/, oh crap. Anyway, there's the merchandise. There's also membership available on the YouTube channel now here as well. And I want to make sure that you see the crew cam with all the lovely people who do all the work to make this show. See, look, we got call screeners who are talking to people right now. There's thumbs up. There's hats. Wow, everybody's doing it. And if you're watching us live right now on YouTube, up above the chat is a donation box. And unlike super chats and other things, this, because the Atheist Community of Austin is a nonprofit organization, that box, 100% of what you donate in that donate box will go directly to the Atheist Community of Austin. We appreciate all your help, all of your support. We're an entirely, well, almost an entirely volunteer organization. We've got the building and we've got one employee right now. But we're looking to improve on all that once the coronavirus quarantine's over and we can actually get back to the building and start having gatherings and stuff like that. So all of your help and donations are greatly appreciated. Lloyd, how the hell have you been since the last time we did a show?
Mourning my departure from the show and feeling as though I'm never going to be invited back. And so you can imagine my elation at hearing news that I would be welcomed back to the atheist experience. I'm just a little bit in trepidation as to whether we're going to get another onslaught of nutters. I mean,
I'm anticipating it. I am, though, a little disappointed because, you know, when you were on here last time, I said, I'd love to get you back on. It was one of my favorite shows, and we would work this all out. So yet you sit around thinking you're never going to get back on. You know, your lack of faith doesn't bother me, but the lack of confidence in, you know, those of us here who enjoyed your company and wanted you back, that's a little disturbing. Maybe we should just kick you off right now.
I should have more faith.
Yeah, well, not faith, but reasonable.
A surprising takeaway from the show, viewers, is that we need more faith. So
no, you need reasonable confidence based on the evidence. You want to get to some callers?
Absolutely. And I'm feeling good. I feel as though, look, how long has this show been running now? Like 20 plus years.
Yeah.
And I just have a feeling that this is the show when we're going to get proof of God. It's just a feeling. So we'll see whether I'm right.
Well, I bet it doesn't happen from the first call, because the first caller I'm taking is an atheist named Dave in Austria who wants to correct me on something. And so let's get the corrections out of the way. How you doing, Dave? Welcome. You're on with Lloyd and Matt.
Thanks a lot. No proof of God here, coming from here. Hey, I'm currently geographically closer to Lloyd than Matt is in Vienna.
Yes. Cool.
So the thing I want to correct on is, as I told the call screener, is please stop. Stop asking Christians who defend slavery to be your slave. Now, as a shorthand, I like to call them slavers, just as you call flat earth defenders flat earthers. There's a little more to it, but whatever, I'll get to it later. What happens is they always try to say, well, not always, but they sometimes try to say slavery wasn't so bad back then. And they often use the phrase, it was a different time, you know, implying that the circumstances of biblical times were so harsh that slavery was occasionally preferable to, for example, homelessness. And I know it's a weak argument to start with, but what I think gets missed in these cases is this: for whom is slavery not so bad or not the same or preferable in whatever circumstances? Now, I don't believe that they're speaking to the perspective of slave owners. They're implying that it was not so bad for the slaves. And I think it's reasonable to assume, and maybe I'm wrong, but I think that many or most of these slavers, the Christians who defend slavery, are making the comparison from the slave's perspective. And even if I'm wrong, it's still important. There's important reasons that you insist that the slave's perspective argument is backwards, a backwards approach, and it's not appropriate for the debate on whether it's immoral or moral or amoral. And here's why. Those passages in Exodus and the others that we often cite, I include myself now, I often cite them as well, they don't instruct the reader on how to be a slave. The New Testament does. But the ones we talk about, the brutal ones, are not instructions on how to be a slave. They endorse how to be a slave master. So once you asked the woman from Pennsylvania, would you come here and be my slave? And she agreed. But what I was saying is that this is the wrong question.
Why?
The right questions are, why? Because it's, well, first of all, because that's not what the commandments are for. The commandments are for how to be a slave master. But more simply,
it's a commandment.
Not a commandment. You're right. I'm sorry. The law. It's a, how to be a slave master.
But this is what the law is. The law is setting up a scenario, and I'm asking the person who seems to be advocating for that scenario if they would be willing to be a slave under that scenario, which is a perfectly legitimate question.
It is. But it's,
so why would you want me to stop asking that question?
Because it's a better question. The better question is, would you come here? The question is, would you make me your slave and describe to me how you will morally...
That is a stupid fucking question. Hey, since you're such a big fan of slavery in the Bible, would you come here and enslave me under those things? They would say yes and think they're a kind slave master. That question doesn't expose any potential hypocrisy at all. So that's the worst of the two questions.
It does. It does explain. And I'll tell you why, because the follow-up question is, describe how you will morally enslave me in those rules. As a Christian, how is that moral?
They will just have to say that they will follow the law that is laid out in the Bible in how they treat me as a slave.
Right. And so then what they need to say is, if I beat my slave as a person, as the slave owner, if I beat my slave with a rod and he dies after a few days, I'm not to be punished, and that's moral and correct. If I make my male slave and get him married, yada, yada, I keep his wife as children, and that is moral.
This is a waste of time. I completely vehemently disagree. The question you're suggesting I replace, it doesn't accomplish a thing. I can put my Jesus hat on right now and say, yes, I will enslave you, and I will do so under the strictures in the Bible, and I will do so as a Christian, and you will enjoy being my slave because I will be showing you the love of Jesus. That question doesn't get to expose anything at all about whether or not slavery is moral or anything else.
I truly don't want to waste your time. I would anticipate that answer, and I would say, great, how is that more moral than the exact same setup without putting me in chains?
I didn't say anything about putting you in chains, and I didn't say anything about being moral. Okay. You asked me if I would enslave you under what the Bible says, and I said yes. Now, why is that immoral? How do you make the case that what I'm doing is immoral?
Because no matter what the scenario is, slavery is immoral.
That is a bald-ass assertion, and that's why you're not getting anywhere by taking a good question, which is designed to expose how they should intuitively understand slavery, because it's the slave's perspective that is the one that shows how immoral it is. You could be a nice slave master, and you've given them a question that is a get-out-of-jail-free card. No, I'm not doing that. Thank you.
But the immorality of slavery is the refraining of them taking away their freedom. And that's what I'm trying to point out is that if you take
your question, your question does not make that case at all. As a matter of fact, as long as you keep going down this line of their thinking that, hey, it would be better to being homeless or being in prison or whatever else, you might actually be doing them a favor. Your line of questioning is so bad that it seems to be coming from the point of view of the people who are willing to advocate for the biblical slavery. That's how bad it is.
Oh, no, I don't want that. Oh, okay. Well, I obviously have to rethink it then, because I don't want to do that.
Thank you. All right, Lloyd.
I really hope I'm never in a situation where I need to call people and tell them that they're asking the wrong question. A question's a question, you know?
Of the two, though, if they have two questions and one of them is designed to expose a potential bit of hypocrisy and the other one is a get-out-of-jail-free question, I think...
You don't want to make it easy, do you? Yeah. You want to make it as...
Hey, would you come here and enslave me? Sure, I'll enslave you. The Bible doesn't say I have to beat you; it just says I can. And as long as you don't die within a couple of days, I'm allowed to do that. Which means that I could just smack you in the face every morning when you get up. It's biblical. It's sound. But I won't do that because I'm a nice guy, and you'll like being my slave. There's something there that's fundamentally misunderstood. But all right, so that was the one call that was for me, and all the rest of these are for you.
Oh, okay.
So, for example, Lloyd, I'd like
for you to choose any.
Sawyer in Australia, who is also an XJW and wants to know if it's a good idea to get involved with atheist activism. Welcome, Sawyer. You're on with Lloyd.
Hello. Hello, Matt. Hello, Lloyd.
Hi, Sawyer.
I'm glad that you're back on. I didn't get a chance to call the last time you were on. So I'm really glad about that. Firstly, I just want to thank both of you so much. I was raised a Jehovah's Witness, and both of you guys were like very instrumental in my journey of waking up a few years ago and just helping me to push myself, gain more understanding, and just have more sound epistemology. So thank you so much.
Pleasure.
I currently have a good relationship with my JW parents. They no longer try to encourage me or get into discussions about religion. I think mainly because I come with stronger logical arguments, and maybe another reason is because they think I'm too far gone. But I currently have a good relationship with them. They're supportive. It's all good at the moment. But I have like this urge to get into activism. I want to use my skills to help people, discuss topics, spread awareness. I'm just wondering, like, in view of the JW shunning practice, Like, is there an approach that you suggest, or you think it's a bad idea that I get into it? Or
okay, so it sounds as though what you have at the moment with your parents is less than ideal, because when you're trying to persuade them that they're being misled by an abusive, manipulative organization, they're recoiling and you're running up against a brick wall. However, if I'm not mistaken, you still have at least some relationship with them. And you probably recognize that the more you get involved in activism, particularly atheist activism, but really any activism that contradicts your parents' beliefs, the more your relationship with your parents will be under strain. And only you know how much you value your relationship with your parents and how important it is to hold on to that. So you need to think about it, spend a lot of time dwelling on what you want out of life. On the wall of the bunker here of my studio, I have a quote from Christopher Hitchens: never be a spectator of unfairness or stupidity. Seek out argumentation and disputation for its own sake. The grave will supply plenty of time for silence. I find a lot of meaning in that quote, because what it's saying is, while you have a voice, use it. However, I don't think activism is necessarily for everyone. I think that just making it out of an abusive and coercive group is itself a tremendous achievement, given the fact that there are 8.5 million Jehovah's Witnesses currently who are nowhere near being able to critically evaluate their beliefs, let alone abandon them. So just pat yourself on the back for making it this far. And if you do decide that atheism is for you, launch into that knowing that it may be at the cost of your relationship with your parents, but only you can make that decision, basically.
When it comes to activism, there's a lot of different options about how people can be involved. It's not just like everybody doesn't need a show and a podcast, and everybody doesn't need a blog, and everybody doesn't need to be the treasurer of their local community, but all of those positions need somebody in them, and there are plenty of ways to work with volunteer organizations, and not just financially. Beyond financial donations, there's, you know, every time a group gets together and meets, there's something that needs to be done, even if it's just being an anonymous person there for someone else to speak with. And all of those things have value, because we need to build communities. So there are landing places for people finding their way out of Jehovah's Witness, Christianity, you know, of any stripe. And you need to figure out what you're most comfortable with and where your particular skill set and where your comfort level will let you do the most good.
Yeah, that's cool. Thank you guys so much. That kind of helps a bit. At the moment, I'm a bit of a creative artist, and I still have a lot of JWs who follow me on social media and still view my content. So I'm constantly dropping like little gems of reason and logic here and there, but they're very subtle, never direct, not directly anti-religious.
Well, there's an artist in the UK called Banksy. No one knows who he is. So you can do your art completely anonymously and have a tremendous impact on people. You don't necessarily have to out who you are. So that's something to think about.
That's cool. Yeah, you're doing that too.
It's cool as well. Sorry, I missed that, what you just said.
Oh, I just made a joke about getting filthy rich, but I was letting you finish.
Sorry, it's a bit of a bad line.
Yeah. So has the advice been helpful for you, Sawyer? Do you feel as though
we've lost him?
Oh, okay.
My apologies. Yeah, there was some kind of delay or whatever else, and I just all right. We'll save that one for a little while. Actually, we won't save that one. We've got Kevin in Arizona who thinks there's a flaw in my logic, or probably better to say that I've made a. Hopefully, he can identify a fallacy, because. On the question of, is it rational to believe in God? Go ahead, Kevin. You're on with Lloyd and Matt.
Wow. Okay. Thanks, first of all, for taking my call. And I got to say, I'm really nervous because I've never called into a show like this before. And I really appreciate what you've done as far as the show, because it really helped me when I was coming out of a fundamentalist Christian church. So thank you for that.
Sure. Yeah,
so to get straight into what I was about to say, give me one second. All right. So the maybe inaccuracy or flaw in your reasoning when it comes to whether or not it's rational to believe in God. I recall a number of conversations you've had where people asked you, you know, if some kind of entity were to appear before you, kind of like a Damascus Road type experience of some entity that appears beyond our dimension of space and time and, you know, comes in front of you and says, hey, you know, I'm God, or says, you know, hey, God is real. You've said
if it's appearing before me, how can you reach the conclusion that it's outside of our space and time? Because that would seem to be inside of space.
Let me give you an analogy, because I expected you to ask that. So have you ever seen the Flatland? Like Carl Sagan talked about. Imagine if, so we live in three dimensions of space and time, right? So imagine God existed in a fourth, fifth, sixth, or however many dimensions.
Sure, you'd need to actually prove that. You need to prove that. You don't get to just assume it, and exactly. You don't get to assume that because you think there's something that's consistent with that, that therefore it's true. So how can you prove it?
It could be an alien. You're right. I'm not saying that it's...
No, what I'm saying is, how can you prove that it's God?
Okay, here is the crux of the argument I'm going to make, and I definitely want to be corrected if I'm wrong.
That's a guarantee.
So basically... when you say to people that there's no good reason to believe in God unless you have basically unequivocal empirical evidence.
Not the position.
I think that...
Go ahead.
Okay, so then my perspective was wrong. Thank you for correcting me. Let's say...
My position is that I'm not aware of any good reason to believe in God. And if God is supernatural and the supernatural cannot be investigated and confirmed, I don't know how anybody could have a reasonable belief in anything supernatural. And so from there...
I believe that there are ways... Go ahead, sorry.
I'm just saying from there, make the case.
Okay, so let me make the case. And this is something that is multifaceted, so I guarantee you I'm going to articulate it poorly, but I'll do my best. So the idea is, essentially, God exists beyond our three dimensions of space and one dimension of time.
How do you know
this? The reason why we can't perceive... That's the belief system, right? So
I don't care.
We can only really answer you based on actual facts. We can't just go off your imagination.
If you define a God that's...
Let me get my proposition out, and then I'll give you the basis of why I believe.
Kevin, if you define a God that is untestable, then there's no way for you to get to it is reasonable to believe in that which isn't testable, because you can't have evidence
for it. That's not exactly what I believe.
But you just said God exists beyond our space-time, and I asked, how do you know that?
I'm putting out my first premise. That was my first premise. So
Kevin, your first premise is hereby rejected. Start over.
Okay, sorry. It's reversed. I completely reversed because I'm nervous. That's the conclusion. Let me give you the premises, okay?
Okay, because now see, this is what when you say God exists beyond our reality, and I ask, how do you know that? Why the fuck would you start with a conclusion? Arguments start with premises, and when I ask you why you believe this particular conclusion, I'm asking for the argument. So go ahead, explain to us how we can know that there's a God who.
Please have a little bit of empathy for me. This is my first time calling in any show like this. I guarantee you in the comment section right now.
I have plenty of empathy. Kevin, but I also have lines full of other people. And so I'm trying to get us to the point of...
Please get out what I'm trying to say.
I haven't finished the sentence. Go ahead.
So Matt, I'm going to try my best to make a good argument, but keep in mind, you are very good at your explaining
I'm
your
aware of that. I don't need a preamble or a disclaimer. I just need the damn argument.
Okay, let me make the arguments then. Okay, so
thanks for the preamble.
It is possible. So first premise is, it is possible that there are more dimensions of space and time than we can currently perceive. So my second is, man, I'm not going to lie. I'm nervous because I'm just trying to get a point out, and I feel like, I was expecting a back and forth. Let me help you, Kevin. I'm trying to debate you.
Let me help you, Kevin. You cannot get from it is possible to therefore it is true. You have jumped out of the realm of standard syllogistic propositional logic, and you have entered the realm of modal logic. And so you can't get from it is possible to therefore it is true. So your first premise has already broken any hope you have of getting to reason.
Okay, so Matt, let me say that that's absolutely 100% valid. I'm not here to try and one-up you or do a gotcha, or I'm genuinely trying to understand your position better. And if I don't articulate myself well, that should be expected.
Kevin, my position is really simple. I don't believe a God exists because I have yet to be presented with a reasoned, sound argument based on evidence. That's it. That's my position.
Okay, well, let me address that. Okay, I'm going to do my best to address it. And please, if I make a mistake, please correct me. So scientific understanding is perfect when it comes to understanding the material world, right? So
No. What on earth makes you...
Well, not necessarily perfect.
Can I try and help you, Kevin, here? Kevin, I'm going to try and help you for a moment, and I'm going to try and do that by reading the note that you gave our screeners. When you spoke to our screeners, you said, you ask us to demonstrate if God or the supernatural exists, but our ability to comprehend the universe cannot encompass the supernatural. Does that reflect your argument?
Correct. And what I was about to argue, and you're correct that modal arguments are flawed when it comes to an absolute as to whether God exists or does not exist. So let me do my best to correct my mistakes. And I'm totally willing to say that I'm wrong if I'm wrong. Keep in mind, I'm nervous. I'm just doing my best, Matt. I appreciate you and I respect you, even if I don't always agree with you. So let me try my best. So it's possible that God exists. So let's go ahead and move further from that. You know, if God exists and God is infinite, it's impossible for a finite mind like ours to fully understand or comprehend God.
Kevin, can you hear me? So now you've moved on to another argument that also begins with it's possible. And this time you're just saying it's possible that God exists. I reject your premise. You have not demonstrated that.
You have every right to reject both of my premises, but I'm not done yet. And I think it's
Kevin, you are done. When a premise is rejected, you don't just keep going on with the argument.
It seems like my approach is not best fit to this situation. It would probably be a better approach if it was just a one-on-one conversation. So let me say this then. I have no hope of winning against you in a straight-on debate because, you know, this is your life's work, and I respect the fact that you're passionate about advocating for what you believe, but there's no way I'm ever going to be able to construct an argument that is flawless.
Can I tell you my problem with your argument as you expressed it to our screeners? This God, who we are unable to comprehend because we cannot comprehend the supernatural, seems awfully anxious on us comprehending that he is a God and accepting his power and majesty and assigning him certain attributes. So God himself, assuming that you're talking about the Christian God, has a lot to say about us accepting the supernatural. But you're saying, well, we can't accept it. We can't comprehend it. So which is it?
Let me clarify, because I'm not a Christian anymore because I was in a very fundamentalist Christian church that I was more like a cult. And it really helped me to have this show to get out of it and to see the flaws in their reasoning. What I believe is that this idea that God wants us to believe in him or her or it or whatever, I don't think that it necessarily matters, you know, to God whether we believe in God or not. I don't believe in a God that creates an eternal hell. I don't believe in a God
who wants to destroy people who don't believe in him one way or the other, according to the Bible, at least.
It's an awful belief. I think it's disgusting.
Kevin, you have abandoned the parts of God that you didn't like. You have invented a God that you do like, and you can't do anything to demonstrate that the new God that you like better is real. So what was the point of calling?
So the point of calling was to better understand where you're coming from. And I want to acknowledge that I could talk to you for hours and I could present all the experiences or beliefs or syllogisms or whatever. There's always going to be a flaw in any argument anyone makes about the supernatural. Whether someone says there is a God or there is no God, we can never create an argument that's perfect.
Kevin.
Because we're talking about something
else. Kevin, if you cannot create an argument that is valid and sound, why do you believe it? Why would you believe something without a good argument for it?
Okay, now let me go to a different piece of evidence that I think you don't believe either, personal experience.
It's a good question. I want to hear your answer to that.
I'd love to.
Why would you do it back to front? Why would you say, this is what I want to believe, and now I'm going to go looking for arguments to support it? Why wouldn't you first have the reasons to believe something and then believe it? Why are you doing it the other way around?
Let me give you an example. Now, it's a very short story. I'll do as quick as I can to tell you. It was very tell me, was it synchronicity? I know you.
We do have other callers, Kevin, and it was a very straightforward question.
Go ahead with the question again, and I apologize for not.
So what you're doing is you're saying, I want to believe this, and what I'm going to try and do is find all sorts of arguments to support what I want to believe. Why are you doing it that way around? Why aren't you instead examining the evidence and coming to your conclusions accordingly?
I have done that, and I've spent a long time of my life both as a theist and an atheist. I went from being an agnostic, kind of not wishy-washy, to a fundamentalist Christian, to an atheist, to maybe more of a believer in God, but not a believer in the kind of monotheistic Abrahamic God. So if I'm wrong, I want to know that I'm wrong.
You haven't answered the question, and it was a really good question, but if you don't want to answer it, then that's fine.
So I'm sorry. And again, I'm nervous, and I know I'm not making the best points, but this is my answer. I don't know whether God exists or whether God doesn't exist. And for me, it's more of a following of a gut feeling or an intuition. And I agree that I have a cognitive bias. I would rather there be meaning in the universe than no meaning. So I agree that I'm biased.
You don't care about my viewpoint. Kevin, what you're saying is you don't care whether or not, you don't care what the truth is. And you called in to challenge what it says here from the call screener is that there's a flaw in my logic about what is or isn't reasonable. And now after this discussion with Lloyd trying to get you to answer questions and me trying to get you to answer questions, now your position is, I don't really care whether or not it's reasonable. I have a bias. I want this to be the way it is, so I'm going to go with it. Thank you for completely wasting my time, Kevin, and Lloyd's time. If you want to call in and have a logical argument, a discussion, cool. If your argument is flawed, we'll point it out. You don't have to say, oh, if I made a mistake, tell me. Trust me, we'll tell you. I mean, that's what we do. But if you begin with X is possible, and you don't demonstrate that X is possible, and you begin with X is true, or this might be the case, or anything like that, that isn't going to get us to the God that you're talking about. And then after dancing around, all that you've got left is, well, personal experience. Well, I would have loved to know what personal experience you had that you think justifies this, but you should have perhaps started with that if that's actually your reason. Don't come in with fake reasons. And don't lie to the call screeners. I mean, lying to the call screeners gets us nothing. And people do it all the time. They pretend to be a theist when they're an atheist. They pretend to be an atheist when they're a theist because there are people who suspect that we're just not going to take their call or we're only out to get this particular type of believer. The call screening is, I love our call screeners, but they can come on the channel right now and tell you the only thing that happens is we prefer theists over atheists. And then when we're going through trying to figure out what we're going to take or if somebody's going to get dumped, it's going to be an atheist who's calling in for something we've addressed that may be better addressed by pointing them to recovering from religion or something. I don't know.
I still have faith, though. I think that proof of God is going to be in this show.
Okay. Well, let's put your faith to the test because we have Douglas in Georgia has evidently an argument for God based on the existence of a soul.
Hey, it's my first time being on too. So I'm a bit nervous.
Douglas, you're on with Lloyd and Matt, but if your argument is based on the existence of a soul, what evidence do we have that a soul exists?
Okay, so did you want me to run through the argument first or just the proof of the soul?
Well, is your argument based on the existence of a soul?
Yes.
So we would need to establish the existence of a soul first, wouldn't we?
Yeah, we can. I mean, sometimes people run through arguments and then they argue about the premises, but I can go ahead and jump right to the argument.
Douglas, do you not understand why it's important to argue about the premises? Because if you think a soul exists and I don't...
No, I mean, I understand. I understand.
You're going to keep interrupting me like you did last time. Okay. There's a reason I'm asking about the soul, because if your argument is based on the existence of a soul and you think a soul exists and we don't, then the first thing that would need to happen in any reasonable discussion is a demonstration that the soul exists, right?
I understand that. What I was asking at first was just that sometimes people run through arguments and then they discuss the premises. So I was asking if you wanted me to run through the argument first and then discuss the premises, or if you want me to discuss the premises first and then run through the argument. But obviously you want me to discuss the premises first and then run through the argument. So let me begin with the argument for the existence of a soul.
Cool.
Okay. So this is the argument for the existence of a soul. This was put forth by Alvin Plantinga. So it says, if I don't have a soul, then I'm identical with my body, right? Or my brain, but whatever. Let's just call it body for short, if that's okay. So if I don't have a soul, then I'm identical with my body. But it is possible for me to exist when my body doesn't exist. Therefore, I'm not identical with my body. Therefore, I'm not only a body.
How's it possible for you to exist absent your body? I haven't seen a demonstration of that.
Yeah. So, I mean, well, first we could, what I mean by possible is just logically possible, but we can first run through a few lines of reasoning just to. So,
Douglas, I don't care that something is logically possible in the sense that you're talking about. And I want to be able to explain this, because logically possible in that sense just means nobody has shown that it's impossible. It's based on this notion that everything is possible until we can prove that it's impossible. I want to know if it's actually empirically possible. If it is possible in reality for you to exist absent your body, how did you demonstrate that point?
I mean, I think it's possible, but first, why do you reject logical possibility? I mean, what's wrong with logically possible?
Because logical possibility does not demonstrate reality. So if you want to say that I am, in fact, or I have a soul, you can't just say you have a soul because nobody's shown that it's impossible for you to not have a soul.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what the whole basis of modal logic is. It's based on it's possible P if and only if it is not necessarily the case that P is false.
Which is why we're not going to make any headway here, because I don't care if it's possible. I care if it's actual. Because logical possible, anything is logically possible as long as you haven't shown that it's impossible. But my position is that empirically, in reality, possibility needs to be demonstrated. I don't care that it just merely hasn't been shown to be impossible, because unicorns are possible doesn't mean they're real.
Yeah, I know, but you would have to actually construct the argument using the possibility of unicorns in order to actually demonstrate something. But based on evidence, it seems to, I mean, the whole modal logic is based on logical possibility, but either way, we can get into the premises, so.
No, we can't, because you can't get started. So, thanks. So, for those who aren't familiar with this, not only do I potentially have a problem with S5 and other things related to modal logic, but at the end, this is kind of what the last caller tried to do a little bit too, right? Because he started off with, you know, it's possible that a God exists. It's possible this. It's possible this. And when you say it's possible that a God exists, or it's possible that I have a soul, all you're really saying is you can't prove me wrong. Well, that is true of every unfalsifiable proposition, that it would have to be considered logically possible because its logical impossibility can't be demonstrated. That's what would happen.
You've arbitrarily chosen the infalsifiable proposition based on your biases.
Yeah. It's also possible that I don't have a soul. And so why not go with that one? And in these arguments, that where people are like, oh, I want to argue for the existence of God based on the existence of a soul. And then when I say, okay, prove the existence of a soul, what we get is, well, a soul is possible in a logical sense. Well, that doesn't mean it's possible in any real sense. And what I care about is actually reality. But all right, here we go. This one's clearly what Lloyd has been waiting for.
Yes.
Malcolm in California is bringing new evidence for God. Bring it, Malcolm. How you doing?
Very good. So what I...
Malcolm, thank you so much for calling, because I was saying earlier that I feel as though this is the show out of, what, 20 plus years of the atheist experience where God will finally be proven. And when you spoke to the screeners, you said that you have new evidence for God. So I want to hear it.
Yeah, I do have new evidence, but I want to say that... you know, it is only possible to prove it wrong or to prove it true because of its natural existence, and it's not a supernatural explanation. So
you're not filling me with confidence.
I could only bring forth so much evidence. Sorry, what was that?
You're not filling me with confidence, but what is your new evidence?
Well, I have evidence that a species that looks like an eel or a snake in the present or some point in history is the meaning behind God in all the religions.
So there's a species that either looks like a snake now or looked like a snake at some point in the past, and that species is the meaning behind God? That sentence doesn't make any sense to me.
And it's because of the languages. Many different languages have a pronunciation of God or angel that compared to the pronunciation of snake or eel in the same
language? That you're pronouncing pronunciation.
What language are you choosing as your standard for interpreting these things?
Well, I've been using the older languages. So
which come on, please tell me. I didn't know that you were a linguistic expert, and that sort of thing fascinates me. So, which older languages have you consulted to arrive at this revelation that eels or snakes carry a hint at the meaning of God?
Well, if you look at, say, Latin, for example, you'll see that the Latin word for snake is phonetically similar to the pronunciation of angel in Latin. And the same thing goes with Allah and Al-Anqualisi in Arabic. So,
are you familiar with pattern-seeking, Malcolm?
Am I familiar with what?
With pattern-seeking. It's something that humans have been doing from our earliest beginnings. Oh, look, there's a pattern in the seasons. There's a pattern. When we hear thunder, usually we can expect lightning. So if you hear anything that sounds like thunder, I'm going to be terrified and I'm going to run and I'm going to shelter. That's pattern seeking. And we still have it. We still use it. But unfortunately, we sometimes deploy it to arrive at false positives. So that's where lots of conspiracy theories come from. Oh, I identify with this issue, this explanation, because there seems to be some kind of correlation. Correlation does not equal causation. So just because you're seeing something that appears to line up with the meanings of words or with the arrangements of letters, that doesn't get you to God.
I know the languages do not tell a story, but they do lead to, but the languages do lead to other religions. Stories.
So I'm confused right here. You're saying that the Latin word for snake is phonetically similar to the Latin word for angel. I don't know. That is true. Although there are many Latin words for snake, not just anguis, but serpens and colubre and draco and vipera and jackalus. All of those, which a quick Google search turned up. I'm not going to proclaim or pretend to be a Latin expert, but each of those sound like something else. So how does a word in one ancient language, which sounds a little bit or has some phonetic similarity to another word in that language, what the hell does that have to do with a god?
Well, it does have to do with gods in other religions, right? Like, or say, there's a serpent in other religions besides the Bible, other Abrahamic beliefs.
This is a serious question, Malcolm. I'm trying to find out your sincerity. I'm dignifying you as being someone who must be fairly serious and must take these sorts of things seriously. Do you honestly believe that the evidence for God can be found in the arrangements of letters in the Latin word for snake? Is that what you are seriously saying, or are you just throwing it out there to see if you'll get a reaction?
Oh, no, it's not going to bring forth any proof. It's just actual.
You said you had new evidence, and you're already climbing down from that and saying, "Oh, it's not really any proof." So where are you going with this?
What I'm going with it is that this is actually something that would be. This would, if there was no religions or no stories or anything to be told about God, and we just lost all the knowledge of that, but we still had the word God. And we had all our other words, and we could just still speak. This would be the.
Sorry, I dropped him.
Okay.
Just
I didn't even know you could do that, Lloyd. But thank you, because somebody's going to be like, "Oh, Matt was too quick to hang up." Lloyd hung up on him.
I claim that one.
Well, go ahead. You can, since you have the power, pick the next one.
Unlimited power. Gosh. Let's see here.
If it's the right one, you can just take over for me permanently.
Let's just take Nathan in Idaho, who is not a theist, but just wants a little bit of help.
Yeah, you maybe did not can... pick the right
hey,
one.
Guys.
Hi, Nathan. We have a lot of calls.
Hey.
But if you don't mind, can we take your call fairly quickly? And if you need a little bit of help or support, we'll try and give you a few words of advice and then move on to the next caller. How does that sound?
Absolutely. So if you can read what the call screener said, I'll go ahead and briefly just say it again. I ran away from home, essentially, and my whole family, just because they were very staunch religious people. I couldn't bear to exist around them, and I'm seeking some advice to help counsel my younger brother, who I haven't seen in a year, as well as my parents, but I'm visiting tomorrow. And I want to try and avoid coming out as an atheist, but at the same time, helping him in a potential transition away from that. I would also like to do the same for my parents, but it's almost at the point where, you know, people are too far gone, but I still have.
It's just one of those situations where you really must assume nothing if you're not living under that roof. So these are people that you obviously care about a great deal, but if you're not in regular contact with them and you're not able to have conversations with them, my concern is that if you show up for the first time in a long time and you're immediately trying to shake them from beliefs that they hold very precious to them, things could get strained and your relationship could suffer. I would prefer to focus on what you have in common. If you end up having conversations and they ask you questions, then be honest. Are they in like some kind of pressing danger with their fundamentalist group? Is there some kind of teachings that you fear could be of detriment to their health or something?
Not in any sense that is, I suppose, any more severe than, you know, just being very Bible literalist and, you know, being very anti all of the things that I, you know, take personal freedoms away, which I view as very severe, but I guess not in the way where, you know, JWs can be without blood transfusion.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know your relationship with them better than I do. And I get it. I get it that it's very tempting to want to have these conversations and to want to shake them out of kind of wasting their time on something that can't be proven. But ultimately, this is a journey that they need to take for themselves. And the way it works psychologically is that they really, I mean, when you were losing your religion, when you were losing your faith, you were in control of the process, weren't you? There wasn't anyone telling you to do it. It was just a conclusion that you arrived at organically. And if you kind of artificially try and take them on that journey, it could place your relationship under a lot of strain. So all I would say is go easily. Remember that this is a journey they need to go on. And first and foremost, if I were you, I'd keep your relationship intact, because then there's a channel through which they can have future conversations if they want to.
Thank you.
And not that it matters, but I wholeheartedly agree with everything we just said.
Anything I can give to him, my younger brother, so that I can help him a little bit? Should I tell him about the atheist experience? Maybe let him think about that himself?
I wouldn't. I would start with conversations. First, the most important thing you can give your brother is a brother.
Mm.
And to be there, be willing to have conversations, and to be open about who you are and what you think, and have the discussions about what that disagreement means for each of you, and how you're not, the fact that you may not share the same beliefs about a god or gods or religion doesn't mean that you don't still care about your brother. It doesn't mean that you don't want a relationship. Get all those things on a firm footing before you get into contentious points of disagreement.
I hope that's been helpful for you, Nathan. You don't mind if we just move on to some other callers, but whenever I come on this show, I want to have as many callers as possible. So I hope we've been able to help you there.
Definitely. Thank you, guys. You're definitely some of the greats. Happy to watch the show. Thanks, you guys. Bye-bye.
Thank you. You go now, Matt.
Oh, okay. I was waiting to see if you were going to actually drop them or not, but I'll do it. We've got Kevin in Oregon. You're on with Lloyd and Matt. How are you?
Oh, hey, how's it going? I didn't think I'd get on.
Why not?
Hey, I just got a few questions. The first one is, can you comprehend infinity? Is your brain able to comprehend infinity?
Yes, as a concept, I can comprehend the infinity. Can I grasp the totality of infinity? No, because infinity is not a quantity. It just means without end.
You just won't give a yes or no answer.
I did give a yes or no. The answer to your question... The answer to your question, can I comprehend infinity? I gave you a yes.
Okay. Does infinity exist in mathematics?
Infinity doesn't exist at all. It's a concept.
Okay. That sounds... it doesn't exist at all, but it's a concept. So
Okay. Does it exist as an idea?
Does it exist? So does an idea about infinity exist? Yes. Does infinity exist as an idea? No, nothing exists as an idea. Ideas are abstractions. You understand the difference between like concrete actual things that are extant in reality and abstractions, right?
Yeah. you ask yes or no answers to people, and then when people ask you, you just...
I gave you really, yes or no.
Our screener wrote about you? Our screener wrote, condescending caller, at least towards me. Now you've been condescending towards Matt. This is a show for people who have serious arguments, not for people who just want to fire a series of questions at the host and try and trip us up on something. If you have an actual argument to make, make it.
The reason I'm asking those questions is because I'm trying to get to a point here.
We're aware of that, and I'm sorry that you haven't been able to get there. Please do.
Do you agree that after you die, you are gone forever?
As far as I'm aware, I have no reason to think that I continue to exist after I'm dead. Dead is the end, as far as all the evidence points to.
Awesome. So now I'm going to do a hypothetical here. Please don't get mad at me. If after you die, you are dead for an infinite amount of time, then
there's
what
no
possibilities are mathematically permissible?
There's no such thing as an infinite amount of time. Infinity is not an actuality. Infinity is not a quantity.
Okay, so if there's not an infinite amount of time, then you aren't dead forever, correct?
No, you can be dead forever.
Well, you just said there's no such thing as forever.
Correct. You don't ever get to forever. You don't ever get to infinity. It always approaches infinity. But after I die, right now, the state of reality is such that I have no reason to think that anything about me survives my death in a sense where I exist anywhere.
Okay, I would agree with that. But how do you know that there's not beings that exist in the future that couldn't just dig you up out of the ground, reconstruct your brain, and upload it on a server?
I don't know, but do you have any evidence that it's happened? Because the time to believe it is after there's evidence for it.
Well, it's hard to present evidence to like a fish that lives in water about land without using hypotheticals. And
no, it's not. You can pick the fish up out of water and set it on the land, and I just presented evidence to a fish that lived in water of land. So come up with a better example.
When the fish gets taken out of water and put on land, what happens to it? It dies.
I can pick it back up and put it back in the water. Have you never been around a fish at all?
Do you know about sandhoppers?
Okay, that's fair. Let's pretend the fish dies. Okay.
Why is the fish relevant? Why don't you just, Kevin, why don't you just acknowledge that the fish was a bad fucking analogy and answer the question that I asked where you tried to go with the fish?
What question did you ask, David? I'm sorry.
Do you suggested that I can't prove that sometime in the future somebody won't be able to dig me up and rebuild me from my constituent parts. And I said the time to believe that is after there's evidence for it. Do you have evidence for that possibility?
I don't know how I would present evidence from the future other than...
I don't know either. I don't know either, but you're the one that seems to be appealing to the future. So why would you appeal to something that you're not going to be able to present evidence or argument for?
Well, have you read the book? Are you into the singularity at all? Ray Kurzweil, the head of Google, he says by 2045, computers will surpass human intelligence.
Why are you not sticking with the subject that we talked about? No, I'm not. I'm not advocating for the singularity. I'm not a transhumanist. It would be interesting, and it's also completely irrelevant to this. The time to believe the singularity is after there's evidence for it. You want to talk about something speculative? That's fine, but that's not what this show is about. You called in with a specific question.
With a series of questions.
Well, yeah, a bunch of questions. We just don't know what the point was.
I feel like you're contradicting yourself when you say that you're dead forever, but then there's no such thing as forever.
No. So here, this will be really simple. What I said was all of the available evidence shows that when I'm dead, I'm dead. There isn't sufficient evidence to believe in any sort of afterlife, any sort of post-life, any sort of anything down the line. When you have evidence that I will live at some point after my death, and the evidence is strong enough, I will believe that. I'm not asserting as a 100% certainty, when you're dead, you're dead, and you're dead forever. That's not my position. Why on earth would you try to paint it that way when I explained it the second you called it?
That's also, I hold the same position you do. I'm not claiming to know anything that I don't know, but I'm simply offering you a hypothetical situation. I'm
moving on to callers. You don't call in to tell me that what we agree on. Where do you want to go next, Lloyd?
Gosh, I still want to find my proof. There must be some proof of God. That's an interesting one. Justin in Minnesota. I've got a good feeling about Justin in Minnesota. Justin, hello? In Minnesota, you are on the Atheist Experience. Welcome.
Hello. Yeah. So I'm calling in about a study that was done years ago. It was in Time Magazine. And my takeaway as a Christian is that it's evidence for demons.
Who knew that the evidence for demons was in Time Magazine all along? Tell me all about it, Justin.
Yeah. So what they did is they measured people's brains, okay? They hooked up machines, and the brain waves are what they were. Yes, yep.
Yeah, I know that the thing you read, you said, was in Time Magazine, but who did this study? Because Time Magazine doesn't do study. You realize that Time Magazine is not a scientific exploration organization.
Right. They just report.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
Do you know who did the study?
Find those names. I don't have that.
Tell us all about the study.
Yes, sir. Okay. So in that study, they measured brain waves, and they were able to assign brain prints to individuals. The brain print is as unique to an individual as a fingerprint. So every individual has a unique brain print. Then they observed these people under different circumstances, whether they were happy, sad, drunk, sleeping, awake, and the brain print was always the same for that individual. Their brain print never varied or changed under any circumstance. The only time they observed something changing was when people alleged that they were, you know, struggling with demonic possession. So they hook them up, and they were able to observe something coming in and overriding the brain print of the individual, and then a new brain print takes over. After exorcism, the normal brain print returns. So that proves that something that's not natural, so then it would be supernatural, is coming in there and altering the functioning of this individual. And like I said, as a believer, sounds like demonic possession to me. I'm wondering what kind of label would you put on that as an atheist then? It's a supernatural being for sure.
Whoa. You just said it's a supernatural being for sure. How do you reach that conclusion?
It's got to be, because you don't naturally observe it. You know, you would say this person's just acting crazy.
We have naturally observed it.
Acting crazy.
According to you, we've observed a different brain readout from a person, and you're saying that the one and only possible explanation for that is that there's a supernatural being that came in and took over? That's not the way science works.
Because when they actually act crazy, same brain print. This is something else.
Do you think that everyone that acts crazy is possessed by demons?
No, he thinks they're not. He's saying not that when they act crazy, it's still the same.
If they're acting crazy, same brain print, same person. If something's making that person crazy, demon. That's based on...
And you say it came in. Can you describe how it came in? I mean, you're not, again, giving us the actual institute that carried out this research, so probably you can't remember the details, but I'm interested in how this demon came in on the brain scan. Did it say, hi, I'm a demon, or was it just a different scan, just a different image?
It was the only situation where they observed a change in those brain waves, in the brain print.
So people were saying the same thing, and they, while saying that same thing, they had a different brain print. That's what you're saying.
Right, the different brain print comes in.
How does that get you to demons existing? That just means that the brain activity is different when all of these people were saying something similar. That doesn't get you to demons.
Well, I get to demons because I'm a believer, so that's how I attach it. I'm saying...
Oh, well, that's not an argument, though, is it? Yeah,
then we'll get to not demons because we're not demons, right? Right? If that's your argument, then we are just as sound in our position of saying it's not demons because we're not believers. Is that how reason works? Is that how evidence works?
Well, but do you have a document to back up that it's not? I have a document.
What document do you have?
Support that.
The Time Magazine.
You have?
Bible.
Okay. I have a better document right here. It's called The Reluctant Apostate. It's from Lloyd Evans. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's a brilliant founder of JW. And this book holds that it wasn't a demon. So what are we going to do now?
He says it wasn't a demon?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
How does he say that?
Actually, what I think, demons don't exist because he doesn't want them to, or?
What I think he would say
is that this isn't, there isn't sufficient evidence to conclude there is a demon.
What about alien activity?
What about it?
Aliens are demons. Demons are aliens.
How do you know that?
Because an alien is like, if someone from Mexico comes here, they're an alien. They're not an American. So if a fallen angel from heaven comes to Earth, they're an alien. They're not supposed to be here.
First of all, you said angels are demons, and then you went to a different type of, or so you said aliens
fallen
are
angel,
demons.
Fallen angel.
You said aliens are demons, and then you went to, from aliens as in, I don't know, space aliens, to Mexicans coming to the United States. Are you suggesting that Mexicans coming to the United States are demons?
No. We call them an alien because they don't belong in America.
Then why did you bring up Mexicans coming to America at all in this conversation? Think clearly.
They are considered an alien because they're not an American. A demon's not an Earth dweller, so they're an alien when they come to Earth.
Do you have anything else?
So you don't have a label for what's happening there?
Oh, I have a label. It's called irrational bullshit.
I hate to disappoint you. I was really hoping that you would be giving us new evidence. All that you've said.
Your biased understanding,
the conclusion you're reaching based on your proposed evidence is what's irrational. The evidence isn't irrational.
So what's your take on the evidence then? The evidence, how does the atheist interpret it?
The evidence is inconclusive.
So it means nothing.
No.
Lots of people making the same claim, having a similar brain pattern on their brain scans, does not get you to spirit entities hovering around trying to turn us towards Satan. It just doesn't. I'm really sorry. And I had so much hope when I picked up your call. I just thought Justin has a good ring to the name. Justin's going to have proof. You just don't have proof though, do you, Justin? Surely you know that. I'm dignifying you and your intelligence. You must recognize that Time Magazine hasn't been concealing evidence of demons all these years, or however long it was since the article was written. You do not get to demons just because lots of people thinking about demons have the same brain scan. It's just, it really is not evidence, is it?
Yeah. So we're going to move on. I have a little problem with the phone thing there, but now we should have Chris in Boise talking about derivatives of God's nature and everything around us. How you doing, Chris?
Oh, I'm good. How are you?
Not bad.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Very, very good. Thank you, Chris. Okay. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Just driving right now, driving a truck. So,
Drive safely. Gosh.
I'm a truck driver. Well, I have a headset on, so.
Good.
But I had called the show before, and I had talked about derivatives of God's nature being proof of his existence. And I had to rethink everything and try to come at it with like a different approach. So basically, this is all contingent on me believing that there is a God. So it's that God is an agent,
Chris,
and he has said so. There's the laws of physics. There's all these things,
Chris,
that we can observe. The naturalistic. Go ahead.
Yeah, you said all of this is contingent on believing in God?
Well, I said coming from what I'm going to explain to you is my belief that there's a God.
Yeah, so yeah, but
starting out with that, that's the end all, I'm not starting off with that being the premise one, but it's coming from a belief that there is a God.
Okay, so now I'm even more confused because you said it was contingent. Then you backed off that to say that you weren't beginning with that. And then you finished by saying you were beginning with that.
Okay, well, let's just say this is all based on my belief that there is a God.
Okay, then why on earth would it have any relevance to us since we don't believe there's a God?
Well, because I think that these are things that can be seen. So the laws of physics, God is an agent. So he basically set things in motion, and so, things are taking their natural course. But he's set up,
Chris,
and all these things,
Chris.
Yeah, go ahead.
You're telling us what you believe. What we really want is an explanation for why we should believe it.
Okay. Well, can I state the reasons for why I believe this? because you haven't allowed me
That's what we've been waiting for from the beginning. Well, why do you believe this? I don't need you to say, hey, God is the thing that makes physics happen, because there's no way to demonstrate that. And physics has nothing to do with a God, but you have some reason that you believe that. And that's what we want to know.
Okay. So I think that there's derivatives of his nature in us, a need for love. So there's all these things. I call them spiritual things.
Okay, you can call them spiritual things.
And they can't be measured from a physical standpoint. But
this is a waste.
Everything. Okay. Well,
it is. Here's why. Calling something spiritual doesn't mean it's spiritual. And pointing to things pointing to things that you think are spiritual that you can't demonstrate are spiritual, to say this is why I believe in God, I'd argue that you believe that they're spiritual because you already believe that there's a God and that there's a spiritual component to these things. We need evidence and an argument in order to be convinced of what you're convinced of. That's all we're asking.
Okay. Well, I mean, so this is coming from me just observing things around me and also taking the teachings of Christ.
Are you interested in persuading us okay, your opinion?
Yes, but okay. So Jesus came from a point perspective of spiritual, like the kingdom of God. And these things can't be measured in what we see, but there is some things that we can see around us, we can observe where, you know, we got these laws that are, okay, I know where you're going.
You must know, I think you know, Chris, that this is just completely unpersuasive.
You're saying, how do you make the connection? So that's what you guys are trying to get me to.
We want proof.
Explain.
Yeah. And I also want you to be safe. So we're going to let you go and take some other callers and let you focus on the road, because I think if you listen back to like the last two sentences you made right before you realized where you were going, what you'll find is there's seriously, do it. I'm not beating you up over it. This happens all the time, especially with people desperately trying to explain things that they haven't fully kind of grokked on their own. Is there was nothing specific or substantive in there. In those last couple of sentences, you were like, we have these things and there's something and it can't be demonstrated. There was like literally nothing of substance there. And so take that back and just write down those two sentences you did and replace the words something and this thing with the specifics that you're talking about. And that'll give you everything you need to come up with, hey, do I have a justification I can present for these things?
Okay, so you're saying our need for love and treating one another and all these things. I said it again. Okay. Because I'm not like super articulate, as you can tell, but
it doesn't matter. You want to just stick with love? You think that love is or the fact that we like love or need love or want love is proof of God?
Well, okay. So I was trying to think about, so I was listening to Richard Carrier, just kind of off a little bit, but Richard Carrier was saying, you know, if there was a moral God that, you know, if you committed, you know, bad acts, then you would become sickly. And I felt like that was kind of fallacious, because he's looking at it from a physical perspective. So there is a law, and it's a spiritual law that when you treat somebody poorly, you know, you suffer.
No, there is no such law, and there is no such enforcement of any such law. People have treated others poorly and not suffered for it at all. And matter of fact, people have treated others poorly and benefited from it. That's the history of the world. That's the reality, is that bad things happen to good people, and people who do bad things don't always get what they deserve. There's no karmic justice. There's no enforcement.
I think they do suffer.
No, they don't. Prove it.
Okay. Well, I mean, look at, okay, so this is kind of going too extreme, but I'll just pick a whole person that
Chris, I really think you should just focus on the road, to be honest, because you're not bringing anything new to the table, and we've got other callers to listen to.
You don't think that there's people who do bad things and never feel bad about it and don't get punished for it? You don't think that's true?
Well, I think those people suppress their God-given conscience.
Okay, that's called projection. That is you That is you giving your opinion about what
is ideal for a human being.
Stop talking.
Everything is ideal for a human being.
Stop talking. You are projecting what you think they feel onto them. You are basically being faced with the evidence that there is no sense of cosmic justice. You are imagining that those people feel bad in order to hang on to this fictional sense of justice that you've got in your head. Let me tell you, there are people who do bad things who don't suffer for it. They profit for it, and they don't feel bad about it. I've watched them. I've seen it.
I agree. I think there is.
You agree. All right. Goodbye.
Problems. Yeah.
Goodbye. You agree. You just started an argument saying, well, when people do bad things, they suffer. Oh, you think nobody doesn't suffer? Oh, no. I think the ones that don't suffer, they're hiding it. Okay.
I just don't think he's really thought it through. And yeah. There were no real arguments there. Can we take the one caller 64?
Sure. Yeah. Andy in New Mexico, you're on with Lloyd and Matt.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Pretty good. Says you used to be an atheist and you did some drugs and now you're a theist.
See, I'm afraid I'm going to sound like a crazy hippie. Here's where I'm coming from. First off, huge fan. I love your work. I'm a skeptic. I'm a naturalist. I'm an atheist by everyone else's definition, unless I'm talking to someone who really wants to parse the words. And essentially... I'm not called a theory. I'm going to call it a hypothesis. So we're all walking around with our own little movies in our heads, right? Like I'm a solipsist experientially. Like the outside world that I experience is constructed by my mind. I don't think there's a soul. You know, I think we're all just little, projectors walking around, experiencing what we can with our senses, yada, yada, yada. Well, I read Sam Harris's book, started meditating, lost my sense of self through some drug use, but I had an experience that, while not convincing me of a God, with quotation marks around it, a all-powerful white man with a beard, my understanding of what's possible makes me feel just that much more like an ant. And I feel like there are probably things out there that exist in the 96% of stuff that we can't measure with our senses and measuring tools. Well, that, dark stuff, it's like the flatland thing. Like, how do you explain the third dimension to a two-dimensional being? Well, I had some crazy drug trips where I think I kind of got a glimpse of what it might look like to see time sideways, like where that other direction might be. And all it did is just broaden my horizons to the point where I'm just that much more skeptical about my own experience. And I would not, if you put a gun to my head, I'd say I'm a deist that believes in who knows how many billions, trillions of gods. And all these gods,
yeah,
you wanted to interact with me.
None of that sounds.
I would be like,
So first of all, it seems you don't understand skepticism, because you were talking about how you're more skeptical, and then you said something, which seems to be the antithesis of what skepticism would be, because what you're saying, you potentially believe in billions of gods. What evidence do you have for any of those billions?
I mean, I don't have any evidence.
You're saying you believe something that you don't have evidence for. That ain't how skepticism works.
I don't believe it. I'm saying this is a hypothetical. This is a potential possibility in my brain. I'm leaving the option that there could be beings that exist in a higher plane, perhaps.
I end up having a conversation with a group of Smurfs. Therefore, Smurfs are real because I've had this experience, and it's possible that Smurfs are real, and I experienced it in a drug trip. So maybe Smurfs are real. Again, that's not how skepticism works.
Can I adjust your metaphor maybe a little bit? So the way I see it is that we're ants. And say that there's a human walking by, and this human, oh shoot, I see all these ants, they're doing their ant thing.
Ants can
interact with these beings that essentially only see or interact.
Andy, you're muted. Ants could prove and experience and witness and interact with a human.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing is, I am completely relying on my subjective experience, which is not evidence. I understand that.
And why should we take your subjective experience as a barometer for reality?
you're also using your fantasy. Well, I mean, but then you're also using bad analogies because if we are ants to a god, and ants can demonstrate a god, then we should be able to demonstrate. Ants can demonstrate a human. We should be able to demonstrate a god.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, potentially it's something that science could get to. Maybe, I don't know.
And potentially, you know, it's something
I'm trying, I will I'm trying to use my working after. Knowledge no, of science stop, to Andy, integrate stop. This theory a little bit. Stop.
This is bullshit navel-gazing, garbage stuff where you come in and say, hey, maybe eventually science might prove this, man. Well, cool. No, thanks for wasting
time. Can I elaborate? This is something I came up with in Andy, 20 minutes. This is 20 years of...
Andy, I'm going to let you elaborate on your own because I'm hanging up.
That was really, really... I'm sorry, Andy. That was really self-indulgent. You know,
yeah.
Who really cares what you experienced on a drug trip? That has no bearing on reality at all.
There are people who genuinely believe in a god, who dedicate their entire life to this god, who vote and enact legislation that marginalizes the rights of other people based on this god. There are people who believe in gods that keep entire communities essentially enslaved, backward, sacrificing their rights and their dignity and their humanity. And you call up to talk about what you think you might have engaged with in some fucking trip. How dare you? Oh, but dude. No, for some of us, this shit is actually important. For some of us, this shit is life and death, as children are being denied medical treatment by parents who believe that God doesn't want them to do that. As people who are being denied their fundamental rights, you know,
families ripped apart through shunning
trans women right now.
Yeah.
And you call in, oh, man, I got so high this one time that I thought maybe this sort of thing over here might actually fuck right on off.
It's fuck just not right a game. It really isn't a game.
I know we have fun with this, and I know that we try and we engage in a lot of batshit beliefs, but at least I try to engage with people who seem to be sincerely talking about what they actually believe. And if it's full-on batshittery, cool, we can point that out. But I don't want people calling in to talk about what they think they could potentially maybe believe if science could demonstrate something a little farther down after they take their tinfoil hat off and set the bong down. I don't need that.
Should we take a call from Peru?
We are, actually. Carlos in Peru, you're on with Lloyd and Matt. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, how are you?
Not so bad.
I just wanted to talk about an argument I watched in a video. I'd like it to share with you. And see what's your point about it. So,
okay, go ahead, Carlos.
Oh, let me read it. Sorry. Thank you. All right. So it has three premises. So first of all, I would like to talk about the concept of two words in this argument, not to get confused. All right. So we're going to talk about contingent beings, which means beings that need a creator or things, whatever. And sorry for my pronunciation, substancing beings, which means that do not need a creator. So in this argument, it says the first premise is it's evident that contingent beings exist, which means that the beings which need some creator exist. So the second premise is, but if all the things or if all the beings were contingent beings, no one could exist because everybody or everything would depend from somebody else and so on into, you know, infinity and finding no cause to sustain their existence. And the conclusion or the third premise is it's necessary that a substantient being exists, which means for, you know, for Christians, that being could be God. So my question is, apart from what your opinion of this argument is, if you don't believe in God, what if, you know, what would be the sustained being for you if it's not God? Or how would you fill that gap? I mean, I don't know if you get me, but...
So the problem with this particular version of the argument from contingency is that you have started with contingent beings depend on some other being. Well, that's not the case. As contingent beings, we are contingent upon something. And the only thing that we can show for sure that we're contingent on is reality. And so... this is why the contingency argument is often expanded to be essentially a first cause argument by asserting that reality is necessarily contingent, but that hasn't been demonstrated.
But apart from that, we all know that contingent beings exist, like a book, for example. If you have a book, and it, in that book I have in my hand, it's a copy from another book, and okay. you say, well, that another book is a copy from another book.
No. That's
We need a first book in the first place.
Carlos, I'm afraid that there's a genuine, sincere misunderstanding, because first of all, books aren't beings. So if you're going to talk about contingent beings,
you can talk about contingent things.
But the only thing that we know that we're contingent on.
I was trying to.
Oh my God. Uh-huh. Okay, I got nothing. I pointed out that the only thing that we know we're contingent on is reality. And therefore, I don't see how that argument gets us to a God, but I got nothing else. You got anything, Lloyd?
Nope.
Okay, thanks.
I suggest we go to Belgium to speak to someone who's turning into an angry atheist.
Oh, no. Those are the worst kind. Sebastian in Belgium, you're on with Matt and Lloyd. How are you?
Hi, Matt. Hi, Lloyd. A real pleasure to talk to you. I used to be a really chill atheist. I used to talk with Jehovah's Witness 2 times a week for nearly 2 years. It was really fun. But for now, I'm becoming less and less patient. And I saw by your videos that you were becoming more and more patient. So I wanted to ask you, what is your trick? How do you do that? Hello? Okay.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Yeah. So everybody, any reasonable person is going to be outraged by things that are outrageous, as I was just a little bit ago when we were talking about the harm that religions actually do. As a matter of fact, I would say that if you're not outraged, you're not paying attention. I am a human being, and sometimes I have quite a bit of patience, and sometimes I don't have as much. I never get it always right. I try to get it right, and I try to get better. I try to make sure, you know, it's fun watching people who've never, ever, ever done this thing that I've been doing for 15 years, talk about, oh my gosh, Matt is so angry. No, nobody on this show has ever seen me truly angry. They've seen me frustrated. They've seen me incredibly irritated. Nobody's really seen me angry. They've seen me outraged. They've seen righteous anger with regard to injustice and things like that. With regard to patience, everybody has a different take on. There are people that think I'm incredibly impatient, and there are people who think that I'm incredibly patient, and they're probably both right, depending on what call. The only thing you can do is make a genuine effort to try. And it's funny because I think I'm very grateful that this call came in while Lloyd is here today, because I think if most people were to set me and Lloyd side by side and say, which one of these two guys is more chill, more patient? Lloyd would win every single time. Unless, perhaps, if you asked Lloyd after he's done 100 episodes of The Atheist Experience. Because I don't think that Lloyd and I are all that dramatically different. It's just that after all these years, it irritates people when I cut to the chase. Like just a little while ago, and somebody in chat was like, oh my gosh, let him finish. But I don't need to let them finish. Once we've gotten to a fallacy in an argument, I don't need to show 12 other fallacies in the argument. We can, if there's no way for them to rehabilitate it, it's much better and it's much kinder to let them go. Let them go out and figure out a better way to argue. Why would you just want to sit here and people are calling in and they're nervous. And I don't think it's ever been anybody's goal or intention to just beat up on someone who's nervous. But also, you can be honest and direct about problems with the argument and then say, we're going to stop here. But no, wait, I want to keep talking. No, it would not be a good idea for you and your mental health and your psyche to sit here and keep talking, because the only thing that's going to happen is Lloyd and I would continue to get more and more irritated that you keep pretending that we haven't already shut down your argument. And now it becomes nothing but a waste of time and an exercise in let's see how riled up we can get people. And I just don't have any interest in playing that game anymore. I have too many callers on hold and too many people watching.
I don't know about angry. If you want to see me getting emotional, there's a video I made called The Martyrdom of Jared Scepter. Jared Scepter was an 10 or 11-year-old Jehovah's Witness who died because his parents were Jehovah's Witnesses and refused medical treatment for him. And as though that's not bad enough, in a JW broadcasting video that was put out by Watchtower last year, they celebrated his death. And they made it sound as though this was this wonderful thing. How brilliant that Jared died faithful. And so watch that video, The Martyrdom of Jared Sepps, if you want to see me getting emotional. Because when I talk about things like that and the injustices of religion, such as shunning, such as the proliferation of child sex abuse, I can get quite mad. But if I'm just talking to some believers, I find that I'm more relaxed, because the difference between me and them usually is that I'm not trying to save anyone from any kind of hell. There is no atheist hell that I'm trying to spare people from. They're interested in salvaging me. They're interested in saving me. I really won't lose much sleep, any sleep in fact, if they continue on with their mistaken beliefs. So they have to come to me and convince me. But I'm not particularly interested. I'm not going to lose sleep if they carry on with their wrong assumptions. It's only when those assumptions start getting broadcast in the form of highly potent propaganda by an organization with the capability of reaching millions of people, that's when I start to get engaged. I'm not so bothered about individuals who approach me in the street and say, "Hey, Lloyd, what do you think about this?" I find I'm able to stay quite relaxed because the stakes aren't too high in that situation.
I understand. Yeah. Thank you very much. I must say that I'm from Belgium. I'm a white male. So I believe I have it really easy. When I see videos from the United States, sometimes I'm banging my head on the wall, asking myself, is it real? Is it at this point? I see sometimes teased from by your show or some other shows, and I ask myself, in Belgium, these people would be in a loony asylum. They would be with crazy people. And that is something that we don't see in Belgium, or maybe I don't see in Belgium. So I'm quite lucky for that. I
hope that's not the case. I genuinely hope that's not the case, because religious belief is not mental illness and is not deserving of institutionalizing just because somebody believes something.
I don't absolutely say that. I just say that the community, the people here, there is a reinforcement that makes people like that fringe. They can't be so vocal as in the United States. Maybe it's just my circle, but I talk with theists, but they are all yes, I believe there is a God, but it's just for giving me morals. For maybe it's not really a God. Maybe it's maybe there is no Noah's flood, something like that.
Different cultures definitely have a different approach to religion. And speaking as a fellow European, I agree that Europe seems to be more secular, which is ironic because the United States is supposed to be more secular constitutionally. But look, I think hopefully we've answered your initial question and given you some reasons to be less upset when you're engaging with theists. Yeah.
And my great grandmother, my great grandmother's from Belgium, so I hope to make it over there one of these days.
If you come, I will come see you. It would be a real pleasure.
Keep an eye on
the last joke that. A last joke that a Jehovah's Witness told me. If you want a real prophecy, Jesus said, if you live by the sword, you die by the sword. It's rather prophetic from somebody that died nailed on a wooden cross.
Yeah, but unfortunately, Jehovah's Witnesses don't do humor that well, but there we go.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you, Sebastian.
I've got Greg in Ohio that Greg says he doesn't agree with my position on the goal of life. How you doing, Greg?
I'm okay. I'm just trying to better understand what you mean from it. Maybe I'm remembering a previous episode incorrectly or changed your position or whatever.
Well, the nice thing is that you and I don't have to agree on what the goal of life is, because my life is my life and your life is your life.
I'm talking about life in general, not necessarily yours and mine.
Okay, so life in general, what reason do we have to think that there is any sort of goal?
That's my question to you. I simply want to know what your position on that is.
I just asked it literally. I don't think that there is any reason to believe that there is some sort of inherent or intrinsic goal or purpose to life, that my life has whatever goal and purpose I give it.
But in life in general, you don't believe that the goal is to survive or thrive?
The goal for who, from who? So when you talk about a goal, that is an intended outcome. And so there must be some mind that is saying, here is the preferred scenario. And I see no evidence of any mind that I give a shit about with a preferred scenario over my life other than me. I mean, you can call me, come in here, and Lloyd could say, hey, Matt, I've got a new goal and purpose for your life, and it's this. And I can just say, well, I don't care. So
I'm talking about life as in just living, not necessarily talking about your goals in life as far as, I don't know, you want a swimming pool or a job or something. I should have been more specific, apparently.
Well, I don't think that you have been more specific, because this is like the second or third time that you've said that you just mean life. What on earth would make anyone think that life just in general has some externally imposed purpose or goal?
I never said externally.
It has to be externally
purpose, but I'll say based on our history, I would say life wants to survive and wants to thrive.
Greg, life is not a thing that has intent or purpose. You said life wants to. There is no thing, there is no entity life that wants anything. Wants come from a mind.
Tumbleweed.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. I was actually referring to the sustainability of life and how it evolved and so on. It's strong. It wants to live.
Well,
I say
it does.
Wants, but apparently that's the wrong word to use in your,
I want to live, and Lloyd wants to live, and I think you probably want to live too, don't you, Greg? So there's three of us that want to live, but that's not life wanting to live. That's individual minds wanting to live.
But that's all life is done. If we're going to say it started from a primordial ooze or something like that, I don't know. That's all it's done is survive.
Okay. Yes, we are the descendants of survivors.
By chance? I mean, it's...
No, we are the descendants of survivors, the ones that don't want to survive.
If I drop a mug, that doesn't mean the mug wants to be dropped.
I don't understand that point at all.
Well, life is moving in its direction because of... For explainable biological reasons. So, just as when you drop a mug falls because of gravity. It's not because the mug wants to fall, just as life doesn't want to survive. It's built into life to survive. So I don't understand where you're going with this.
That's okay. I believe that Matt mentioned that the goal was to survive or thrive when he debated Jordan Peterson.
Okay. I would need to go back and listen to the context of that discussion, because given what's happened so far, I'm not convinced you accurately understood what I was talking about. But
okay, maybe I did not. But at 1 hour 53 seconds, that's when you started to discuss it.
But so there's an analogous a way to view life in the sense of it wants to thrive, it wants to survive. But that's a metaphor, not, hey, there's an actual mind that wants to do this, that is all of life. Life is a mechanical process, as is everything else that is physics and chemistry. And those things that can have offspring and want to have offspring do, and they pass on that desire to have offspring to the ones that come after. But you can't say that life wants something in an actual sense, just metaphorical, describing afterwards. Kind of like when we say, my car just doesn't want to start this morning. We're playing with language a little bit.
I don't disagree. Maybe want was a word that is being inserted incorrectly. I don't splice words as much as you do because I don't debate. So I'll give you that. That's fine.
Have we answered your question?
I'm simply referring to a quote that you made. And I was simply asking you a question about life, because based on history, that's all life has done is survive, and survive in the weirdest places. You go down to the Mariana Trench, which is many atmospheres that human beings can't certainly survive, and life's still there. You go up to one atmosphere at 14.7 PSI, where we're all nice and comfortable, plenty of life there, so on and so forth. And it's been this way in some fashion or another. I don't know what the oldest fossil is, a billion plus, whatever the heck.
So, hang on, Craig.
It's been around a long time.
Craig, on the planet Earth, is it the case that, generally speaking, heat rises?
That is correct.
Does that mean heat wants to rise and heat has as a goal or purpose rising?
No, absolutely not. That's simply a law.
Yep, got it covered. I got to move on because we're past time, but thanks for the call, Greg. Appreciate it. We have one last call here.
I think this is the one, Matt, because I just sense something in my waters tells me that this is the atheist experience where we're going to get proof of God.
Yeah, so Kim, you're on with Lloyd. Kim in California?
Go on, Kim.
Yes, I want your opinion on two verses. One is Ezekiel chapter 37.
I've got them 21. Looked up. Do you want me to read them?
No, I'll read it to you. I want to put a preface on this. Israel was disbanded in the year 70 by the Romans, and it was gone for 2,000 years, and then came back in 1948. Are we good there?
Are you able to kind of explain, because obviously the purpose of this show usually is that people present arguments. So are you just going to kind of throw facts at us, or is there a basic argument that you want to make?
I want to hear your opinion. You say that prophecy isn't specific enough. It could be turned any way, construed a number of, so.
Is anyone else having trouble hearing, Kim?
Chapter 37, verse 21 is specific in its prophecy.
No, it's not.
It says, I will take the children of Israel from among the heathen, whither they be gone, and will gather them on every side and bring them into their own land. That happened in 1948. That's pretty specific.
No, actually, it's not specific at all. It's only because something happened in 1948, and you can then look back and say, ooh, this looks like it matches this thing that was predicted. But it would have been the same if it happened at any other time and in any other way. And it wasn't necessarily a land of their own. And it didn't say, the prophecy didn't say anything with regard to time. Meanwhile, if the entire prophecy taken up by a bunch of people is that eventually Israel will be its own state, then you have people actively working on making Israel its own state. It's just like saying, if I order a medium rare steak, that doesn't mean that the chef and the waiter have fulfilled prophecy when I get a medium rare steak, although it would be nice.
No nation has been gone for 2,000 years and then come back.
Okay.
But do you understand that in the 1940s, when Israel was being formed, there were people literally reading this verse saying, we've got to make that happen. Are you familiar with the concept of self-fulfilling prophecy?
Yes. A number of people have told me that nations sit around reading the Bible and saying, oh, let's make this prophecy come true just to...
Kim, that's not what we're saying. So stop trying to saddle us with what somebody else said. Focus on what Lloyd actually asked.
Okay.
If you have a book that is considered to be the infallible word of God, and this book is saying, here's what needs to happen for all of God's predictions to come true, and you're a religiously devout people, or you are in other countries and you want to see this happen, do you not think somehow people are going to make that happen so that they can then go back and say, ha, this happened, therefore the prophecy worked. But all that's happened is that people wanted it to happen because it's in the Bible to begin with.
Okay, that's fair. One more verse, Isaiah chapter 17, verse 1. Damascus has been the longest inhabited city that we know of in the world, and it's always been fine. It's been there, no big problem. And 17 verse 1 says, Damascus shall be a ruinous heap.
Yeah, what does the next verse say?
I think that's what it looks like right now.
What does the next verse say?
Let me click on it. The cities of Aror are forsaken. They shall be for flocks, which shall lie down, none shall make them afraid.
No. So in my version, I don't know which version you want. Let's take the New Revised Standard Version. See, Damascus will cease to be a city and will become a heap of ruins.
That's verse
one. Her towns will be deserted forever. So let's just see, shall we, whether Damascus's towns are deserted forever. Little bit premature to be calling that one, don't you think?
Yeah, the city has an estimated population of 1.7 million in 2009. I don't think that it represents Damascus not being a city or laying in ruins, do you?
Well, it's, have you seen the pictures? It's a ruinous heap. Now, that's a pretty
A city with 1.7 million people is not a ruinous heap just because there's some old buildings there, too. If the prophecy is that it won't be a city anymore and it will be a ruinous heap, and it's still a city today with 1.7 million population, how is that a fulfilled prophecy?
Well, that's pretty good, and it's specific. Yeah.
And it specifically says it will not be inhabited forever. It's never going to be rebuilt. Do you not think it's a bit premature to be saying Damascus will never be rebuilt?
Okay. Gave up.
Okay.
Yeah, it's funny that the Bible also has that prophecy about Tyre, and Tyre's still here. So,
we had that all the time as Jehovah's Witnesses. Don't get me started on what we were saying about Babylon being deserted. There's even a tourist attraction there now. So, good grief!
Oh my gosh, that's my favorite meme from recent years. Is the asteroid impact next to the visitor center because it's exactly. What people with teleological arguments are doing.
Yeah.
So find it, look it up. I put it up on my Facebook. Anyway, we are over time, and I know there's people who are wanting to interact with Lloyd in other ways, and people who are our volunteers behind the scenes who are making this show happen have been working since early this morning, because there was also Talk Heathen and there was nonprofits, and there's our crew cam for everybody there. I want to thank Lloyd for coming back and doing this again. It's always a pleasure. I'm happy to have you on whenever we can. If you were in Austin, I'd just put you in the rotation and we could do this all the time. And it's truly a joy. I'm sorry, though, that despite your optimism, we did not get an argument with really good supporting evidence that a God exists.
I don't know. I can't believe it. I just had this feeling, but hey, never mind. You can always have faith, can't you?
You can. It just doesn't always lead you to anything that resembles the truth. But
true.
Anyway, thanks to Lloyd. Thanks to all the people behind the scenes. Thanks to you guys. There were in the donation thing. We already raised $1,287. Thank you to everybody who donated. We hit a banner week last week, especially with help from Phil Ferguson. Every one of your donations goes 100% to the atheist community of Austin. And if you are watching this not live, you can go to patreon.com/theatheistexperience. Also, join us at tiny.cc/ACA Discord. There's a bunch of people in there willing to have conversations with you if you didn't get through on the phones. And we will see you next week. Thank you all so much. Bye-bye.
Take care.